Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should probably be trying in yours. I'm one of your hosts, Quad Nines, and I'm here with my co-host, Zakiel from Merfolk Magic.
What's going on, guys?
We've actually got another special guest this week. We've been pretty lucky on those here so far, but this week we've got a Eternal format specialist and a modern hater. You probably know him from YouTube or Twitter, but it's a Lengthy Zemmet. So, we'll say hi.
Hey guys, how's it going? You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube at Lengthy Zemmet. So, you know, as long as you guys are sleeving up with dual lands and not shocklands, we won't have a problem.
This episode is going to be specifically about Fate Reforged. We're going to do our Fate Reforged set review. We're going to talk over, you know, most of the notable cards from the set that are going to, you know, be pertaining to Cube mostly. There's a couple, you know, a couple gems in here. I think there's some debate on some of them. Curious to see what you guys think. But you know, just speaking, you know, talking about Fate Reforged, how do you think it follows up to Cons? Because Cons was so impactful in probably, what, every format? Like, we had Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time that saw play all the way down to Vintage. We had, you know, a couple of the other cards that are going to see play in Modern.
Yeah.
You know, really, really good. What do you think about Fate Reforged? How did it follow up as the second set in the block?
Like I said, Cons was probably one of the better sets I can remember, really, besides, like, maybe Return to Ravnica. But, you know, you had your fetch lands, you had a lot of sweet tricolor cards, which not everybody tries in Cube. But just like a lot of the Eternal playable cards, they're even ban-worthy in some formats. So this particular set was kind of disappointing. There's a couple of neat cards, but overall it's just like they reprinted something that's just worse than something I already had, so.
This reminds me a lot of Born of the Gods. There's a couple splashy cards, but overall it's just a pile of trash. We got Ugin, and that's about it. Financially, the set is horrible. The Cube, I don't like any of them for any Eternal format. So this set was extremely disappointing, and I'm glad that I stayed away for the most part.
Now, yeah, so I think... how do you guys want to do this? Well, actually, I want to talk about something before this. What do you think about the bans? We just came off the banned, you know, the new announced banned and restricted list. You know, we saw a couple cards, once again, Treasure Cruise banned in Modern, banned in Legacy, restricted in Vintage, and Dig Through Time banned in Modern, as well as Pod and the return of Golgari Grave Troll and World Gorger Dragon. And to a lesser extent, Gifts Ungiven. So what do you guys think? You know, I don't play too much Modern anymore, but I found the ban list really interesting.
I was pretty pumped about it just because I hadn't picked up my full Dig Through Time yet. So that's easier to pick up.
What about you, Zemmet? What do you think as the Eternal format expert? Do you think the restriction of Treasure Cruise is warranted in Vintage and the banning in Legacy?
In Vintage, yes, because playing five recalls in your deck is already pretty good, to be honest. even if they hadn't restricted it, it's very hard to fuel your graveyard that much in Vintage, though when you are playing the Gush Fastbond deck, you can get a lot of card advantage that way. As far as Legacy goes, I'm very glad that they banned Treasure Cruise. Blue-Red Delver is just a pile of bad creatures in Legacy, and it had to go. With your Tax and Probe and all the other fun stuff, especially in Legacy when you have access to even a couple more powerful cards like Dig and Force, or Days and Force of Will, it's good to see it go. Dragon, I'm very happy it came back. I love Dragon in Vintage, which used to be a very old archetype back in around the late 2000s, early 2010s. So expect to see a lot of draws coming to your local Legacy community because Dragon is a fun deck to play.
Do you think?
But you can also just draw a game very easily.
Do you think the World Gorger Dragon combo is more potent than just reanimating a Grizzlebrand? Like, I know it's more of a different deck, but do you think reanimating Grizzlebrand is better than World Gorger Dragon? Because I think so, but I've only seen the deck be played in Vintage, I think, like once, so I don't really know too much about it.
Gristlebrand is better, but Dragon is a lot of fun. It's another cool way to win, and if you have Vendilion Click in your deck, you can just essentially draw your combo card. Otherwise, you just draw. You end up drawing the game a lot, unless you have like an Intuition or a Vendilion Click. All the Dragon triggers on the stack.
And what about in Modern? What do you guys think about in Modern?
The Who cares about that format?
Banning of Pod. I don't know. I think the Banning of Pod was not necessarily unwarranted, but I feel like if they were going to ban it, they should have banned it earlier. And I was watching, I think, Magic TV and some either that or on the forums, and they were saying that one of the reasons there wasn't a Modern Pro Tour this year is because Aaron Forsythe apparently said that they didn't want to have to police the Modern ban list very much. And knowing that, I feel like basically saying that knowing that Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time were going to be very good cards, I think if they didn't have the Modern Pro Tour and have Modern on like the forefront stage where everyone was going to be watching, it wasn't going to be as big of a deal as opposed to a couple Grand Prix every year. And it's really funny because a lot of the people who were pushing for the Modern Pro Tour are people who are highly competitive into Modern. Once again, you have all these decks built, and once again, now they have Modern on the Pro Tour. They're going to try to police it to make it a very fair format. And once again, you know, Birthing Pod kind of, you know, got kicked out. And I don't know. I find it really interesting. Like, Pod wasn't necessarily an unfair deck. It just beat you with extreme incremental advantage. But, you know, as far as Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, I think, like you said, the Blue-Red Delver deck, it reminded me of Cobblade, where you had the same exact deck minus a couple of cards that you change in and you can just go play Legacy. Like, it was really interesting, and it just made the format really stale. But, you know, Golgari Grave Troll I don't think is going to have too much of an impact. Like, we don't have Dread Return. There may be some, you know, ridiculous deck with, like, Bloodgasts and Vengevines or something, but, you know, I don't know. I don't think the Dredge Monster is going to be as big as many people think.
I'm not super worried about Dredge being huge in a non-interactive way like it is in Legacy, you know, where it's just like somebody playing Solitaire against you. It does open up a few more, you know, you can brew a little bit more, I suppose. And as far as the people upset about Birthing Pod getting banned, a lot of the games I lost to that deck, they never resolved Birthing Pod.
Yeah.
Usually Birthing Pod would just turn on my Shadow of Doubts. I had my hand where I could, you know, I could get them. But, you know, when Modern was first announced, you know, I built Tron and then they banned Cloud Post. So they get no sympathy from me at all. but, you know, I think it does allow for a little bit more, brewing and stuff, which is one of the few things I do like about Modern. It just opens up a few more fringe decks that can kind of get there some weekends. But, anything that can slow down, the Delver decks, like Zim said, it's just a bunch of bad creatures and they just happen to draw a bunch of cards. So, like, you can't thoughtsee somebody when they can just reload in a turn and,
yeah. You know, It killed those attrition-based decks. Like, Jun was almost unplayable.
Mm-hmm. But I was actually looking over the list for Fate Reforged, and there's a couple more cards than I thought there were. Nothing really outstanding. One I was pretty excited to see is that Reality Shift. Has anybody resolved one of those yet?
I have not played this set in Limited at all. But it seems like a pretty sweet, because what does it do? I think it's like two mana, right?
Yeah, it's they're calling it kind of like the blue Path to Exile, because it does exile a creature. It's a one in a blue, exile target creature. That creature's controller manifests the top card of their library, so they get a 2/2 out of it. Mm-hmm. But generally, you're dealing with something that's bigger than a 2/2, so... and blue getting that kind of removal, it's pretty strong, I think.
Yeah, I feel like that's an interesting card, definitely. And going with that, let's, you know, kick it off into blue. So, you know, what event, did you guys see anything in blue that really struck you as like, boom, I want to play this? When I first read Reality Shift, I had a similar, like you said, similar feeling, like this card seems really good. But, you know, we had the Delve Time Walk. Is anyone going to try that? Think it's even good?
No.
No. I might jam one in like a mono blue EDH deck, but not cube. Going to happen. I do like the siege cycle. So the blue one's only 3 mana. So it's pretty cheap and it lets you draw cards. And I love drawing some cards. So I think it's Monastery Siege is the blue one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do like that about this set. They do have a lot of the modal cards. We get to choose, which way you want to play it. And like the Siege Cycle is one of the main ones, but in this one in particular, it's 2 and a blue. And when it comes to the battlefield, you choose Khans or Dragons. You should almost always pick Khans, but if you pick Khans at the beginning of your draw step, you draw an additional card and then discard a card. If you pick Dragons for some reason, spells your opponent's cast cost that target you or a permanent you have cost 2 more. So it's kind of like your own personal Frost Titan effect on that part.
Yeah, very cool. Definitely. Yeah, I think after I was reading this, I found it interesting that it's only spells your opponents cast that target you or permanents you control. Isn't Frost Titan spells and abilities, or is it just spells?
It's spells and abilities, I believe. Like anything that I played him earlier today in Magic Online Cube, actually. I want to say it's just anything that targets him you have to pay too, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But like even there, it makes Thoughtseize cost 3.
Yeah.
Burn spells cost 2 more, so it just I'm looking to put that in some of my dirtily blue control deck. So.
Yeah, seems interesting. What are your thoughts, Emmett? What do you think about this guy?
I would rather have Moat in my cube than this card.
Than Monastery Siege?
I don't like it. It just seems bad. Hmm. Yeah, if we're talking cube, I'd rather have Moat. And if we're talking standard, nobody should be playing that format anyway. So I don't know why this card needs to be talked about. Because it is just a piece of trash unless you're playing a casual deck where, you're 2/2 for 1 is like the best creature card you guys have ever seen in Kitchen Table Magic. I just really don't like this card at all. Even though it looks cool and it's blue, it's just a pile.
There are 2 cards in here that I think a lot of people are really trying to push. I'm not sold on. Monastery Siege is one of them, but I think it's only because I haven't played with it yet. But yeah, I'm not quite sure. So I don't know. I'm going to try it out, see how it works out, and kind of go from there. Looking next into blue, I think we have... Who do we have? Shu Yun, the Silent Tempest.
I think like unless you're looking to go to the Jeskai Tiny Leaders deck, I don't think you should pay much attention to this guy.
Yeah.
So, 3/2 with prowess is okay, I guess, but I don't know what kind of deck you're gonna build that really wants this guy. Like I guess a blue red tempo deck.
Yeah.
I mean, how many creatures do you really want in your blue-red decks? So.
Yeah. So, going back to white here, there's, it's really funny because I feel like I become more excited from some of the uncommons that we get. And especially this set, like we got the card that I'm probably most excited about in the entire set, believe it or not, just because it's so simple and straightforward, which is Mardu Woe Reaper. 2/1/1. So right there, we have another Savannah Lions. And whenever he enters the battlefield, whenever he or another warrior enters the battlefield under your control, you may exile target creature card from a graveyard. If you do, gain 1 life. So strictly better than Elite Vanguard, I think. Literally strictly better. Another Savannah Lions, you have the chance to, accidentally hose a graveyard reanimation style deck if you're playing him. Is there really any, question about if this card's going to go in? Like, are you guys... I don't know. This is a slam include, or at least a try in my cube. 2/1/1 in the white weenie deck seems excellent. What are you guys thinking about this?
Yeah, I think if you're running 2/1/1 in for your white weenie decks, I don't know if you can really have that many. If you're worried about having too many, you probably do cut Vanguard or Savannah Lions if you have those. So fairly aggressive card, and just that random upside is probably enough to let it see.
I like this card.
You said yes. Sorry. You're cutting out there.
Yeah, this card. Yeah, sorry. This card seems great. It's definitely a straight upgrade.
Yeah.
Am I still cutting out?
No, you're good now. So,
Okay, so this card seems great. It's a strict upgrade, and it's going to my cube.
Yeah. Next card, who wants to go next one in white? What were you really, you know, were there any white cards that you guys were really, like, exploding about? There's a couple in here. I don't want to talk the whole time, so.
I like the, a lot of people, of course, talking about it for standard Valorous Stance. Once again, it's not the most efficient removal, because in cube you've got path and swords, but having the option to possibly protect your guy. It's Valor Stance is one in a white instant. Two modes. One says target creature gains indestructible until end of turn, or you can destroy a target creature with toughness 4 or greater. So it's, like I said, it's not as good as path or swords to plowshares, but randomly it could be better because you have the option of protecting your guy. I'm definitely going to give it a shot. So at 2 mana, it's not too expensive.
I think Valerius or Valorous Stance, yeah. You know, it's kind of, I feel like this is one of those cards where you really have to play with. Like, it seems really good. But thinking now, like, I'm not sure either what card it's going to replace or if I would just slide it in because, I don't know. It seems really good. Like, being able to make something indestructible is like a little nice tempo swing. But yeah, you know, I definitely would not mind giving this a try out. Not sure if this goes into the highest of power level cubes though. Just because it is 2 mana. Like, I don't think it's necessarily bad, but I don't know. I feel like this is really interesting. Like, I think a lot of people can use this and a lot of specific decks can use this card. So I'm not sure, but I have to get some more play experience with this.
It is not powerful enough for my cube.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
But do you run Journey to Nowhere? Or is it Seen the Axe?
Yes, I run Journey to Nowhere. I would not swap that Journey out for this card.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, so next, moving on. This is Soulfire Grandmaster. We have a 2/2 for 2. With lifelink and instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink. You can pay 2 colorless and 2 red-blue hybrid mana. For the next time you cast an instant or sorcery from your hand this turn, put that card into your hand instead of your graveyard as it resolves. So you get essentially just buy back your spell. This is a card I'm not necessarily sold on. Like, not that it's not powerful, but I don't know if I want to play it. Like, it makes Lightning Helix insane. It makes Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix. I don't know. It seems like a very powerful card. But of all the 2 drops, you know, you got to think we have Stoneforge. In my cube, at least, we have Stoneforge and Thalia. I think, I don't know. What are you guys thinking about this? I don't really have too much to say about it.
You got to look at, like, the base stats. It's, you know, it's a, like I said, it's a 2/2 lifelinker for 1 and a white. If that is close to getting it in your cube, then yeah, you probably want to give it a shot because all the other text is just, you know, just random upside. It could resolving. The other day I drafted mono red 2 times on Magic Online, and the first time it was just like a 3-0, never had a close game. And then the next time I drafted it, my opponents would always like have, you know, Faith's Fetters into Wyrmcoil Engine or just a random, you know, like Wall of Omens and then give something lifelink. And it's like, you know, just a little bit of life gain can wreck a mono red deck in cube. So, you know, I like having cards like this in there where, you know, like granted, just this one card might not beat a mono red deck, but if you have this and maybe a little something else, it can buy you enough time. Like if you had your own Lightning Bolt, gaining the 3 life could be enough of a swing to let you get there, I suppose.
That's a very good point.
But, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't, considering how much it is to buy, I don't know that I just rush out and buy one because it'll probably come down as far as like on a value perspective, I think.
Mm-hmm. And well, for the direct comparison for me is what I'm like, as far as cube management, I think the card I would replace maybe Seeker of the Way because they seem very similar to me. And I feel like that's maybe why I'm so hesitant. Like this card is, no, like I'm not arguing that this card isn't good. And you make a very good point that its base stats are essentially almost good enough to play by itself. It's just interesting. I don't know. I haven't had enough time with Seeker of the Way to kind of try that out, but I'm also definitely going to give this guy a shot. So we'll see. You know, I'm not too sold.
This is not the type of card that you want to play in a white weenie deck or an American control deck.
Mm-hmm.
You would rather have a bigger creature like a Baneslayer to finish your opponents off. Mm-hmm. I don't see a place for this in my cube at all.
I feel like this is similar to, like, once again, the tempo style decks, Young Pyro, Delveris kind of decks. But yeah, so we'll see. Next guy. Zemet, would you like to do the next white card?
What is it?
Monastery Mentor. What are your thoughts on this guy?
Nope. Not going in the cube. All these white, like, splashy mythics are so bad. Like, the white deck does not want to be playing non-creature spells unless it's casting Armageddon. And that's already, like, a different deck. This card is a 3-mana. It doesn't do anything. Like, besides create these little 1/1s, it's not going in my deck at all. So I would rather run any other 3-drop in that slot. Mirroring Crusader, Flicker Wisp, any of those. Like, this card is just underwhelming to me as well. I'm not a fan of most of the cards that came out in the Mythic slot for Cube. It doesn't feel like a Mythic.
If it costs 2, like Young Pyromancer, would you feel differently about it? Like, splash it in your red deck or something like that? Yeah, that's my feeling.
Then it would go on there. 3's a little too much to ask.
Well, like you said, 3 is kind of the sweet spot for white.
You know, I kind of want to try it. I'm always a sucker for new cards. I definitely want to try this guy out. But once again, I do agree with what you're saying, is a lot of people are going to try to maybe slot this in, thinking it's going to fit into white weenie, and of all the cards... You know, of all the cards you're going to play in White Weenie, you may get value off of a Swords to Plowshares or a Path or something, but that's really not what you want to be doing. But, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of the cards in this set really, to me, kind of feel like they're trying to fuel that Delver-style deck. And it's really interesting. I don't know. I feel like if you're going to make that an archetype, and if you want to make that, extreme tempo strategy an archetype, I guess this card's really good. But once again, I'm not sure if I'm sold on it because I don't think it's better than Young Pyromancer. But at the same time, it is in a completely different color. So I'm not sure.
Well, like I was trying to brew in my head something that would work. And like the reason a card like Jeskai Ascendancy is good in like modern or even standard, because it gives all your creatures, it pumps all your creatures and then taps them, it does things, but, and this pumps out guys, which is good, but they don't have haste and there's no easy way to give them haste really. And like I said, I can see me like paying 3 mana for this guy, trying to untap, play some non-creature spells to make a couple tokens and then pass the turn and just get a board wipe or just any number of bad things. And I've just invested all this time and effort in developing my board and it's just gone. So I don't know.
I agree with that assessment. Mm-hmm. I like what Drew is saying there. Or Quad.
Drew's fine. if somebody wants my information, it's out there.
Okay, so the next card for me on the spoiler is the Almighty Planeswalker. You know, we have this new sweet Planeswalker, cost 8 mana. Ugin, the Spirit Dragon, for a 7 loyalty Planeswalker. He has a +2. He deals 3 damage to target creature or player. -X, exile each permanent with converted mana cost X or less. That's 1 or more colors. And -10, you gain 7 life. Draw 7 cards, then put up to 7 permanents from your hand onto the battlefield. Slam dunk, far shot away. You know, is this going in? Is this not? What are you guys thinking?
I kind of want to hear what Zimmet thinks about this card.
Woohoo! We done got ourselves a good one, boys!
That's what I was hoping for.
This is a freaking cube card. This is something that someone's going to open up in a pack and go, wait, what does this do? And they're going to slam it, and they're going to throw it in their mono green devotion deck, and they're going to throw, or the mono green ramp deck. They're going to throw it in their control deck. This card does everything I want in a cube. It looks awesome, and it's just perfect. This is the perfect card. I already got a promo one. I threw it in my cube. We cubed last weekend, and people loved it. Nice. Like, they all look, besides the promo art, which looks way better than the normal one, the abilities are perfect. The Ghostfire ability is great. The Exile ability is great. And the Win More Ultimate is also hilarious.
It's funny you mentioned the Win More Ultimate, because it's exactly what the reverse of Nico Bolas's Ultimate. You know, they're kind of the rival cards in the yep. lore and everything. Cause funny thing, I ultimated Nico Bolas today and lost.
Oh man.
Well, it would have helped if my opponent hadn't just Genesis waved for like 8, and the only card he missed was Emrakul. Everything else went into play. So like the second 7 permanents did nothing. I did get him to discard his hand, but, it was just what much anything I could do. However, if I had ultimated this card, I would have had a hard time losing. Just, I can't see myself losing if you get to ultimate this card or just get to activate it. Almost any of its abilities seem like just such good value. And the fact it's, you know, where this is colorless and I was having to play like splash all the red sources in my blue black deck for Nico Bolas, this card just seems really sweet. So really looking forward to getting to cast this multiple times.
Yep, slam dunk. I really want to try this guy out. I have not picked up one yet, but I'm going to try to get one as soon as possible and play this guy once again.
Promo art.
Promo art's sweet, but it's not worth $100.
Yes, it is. Financially speaking, even though this isn't what the Cube podcast is about, a lot of people are comparing it to the book Jace Belair in promo, and I would agree.
That's a good
There's
comparison.
Probably less than 5,000 of these out there. And I picked up a lot of them, and I've been selling them like fire. Like, well, people want this card.
How many packfuls would you say they're going to wind up being?
Like,
rough idea?
Number-wise, no idea. There's probably only about 5,000 promo Ugins out there. Mm-hmm. And the fact that a lot of these are not going to be on the market means that these are going to go up. And the artwork is just way better than the little green dragon. Like, it actually looks like a better Planeswalker, in my opinion.
Yeah,
so the like set foils art. Will be cool for people that like set foils, but the fact that it's a rarer promo makes the people that I play with a lot happier that it's in the cube.
So, just from a financial perspective, do you think that this card is going to maybe depress a bit after, like in a month, do you think it's going to drop down to, like, 60 or 80, or do you think it's going to stay at this price? Because even at TCG right now, I think in the past week it's trended down from, like, 110 to, like, 98 or something.
I'm the lowest one on TCG right now at 95, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll go down to about 75, but in the next year, it'll go back up as soon as rotation happens. And the only thing about investing in this one is there might be a dual deck with Bolas versus Ugin. And if they reprint the promotional artwork, if you're invested in it, it's not good. Well, at least the foiling will be different. But I'm content to sit on a bunch of these or sell them at around 95, and just have it. Because this looks like, I don't know. I just feel like, at least the people that I cube with, they expect a more premium experience when they're cubing with like a powered cube. And so I want to make it look as nice as possible.
No, I agree. Is it foil? I thought it was non-foil.
It is non-foil. And this entire cube is getting altered, the current one that I'm using right now.
Nice.
So, you know, getting a promo altered is going to look pretty nice as well.
Sweet. I actually have a alter being worked on right now. I'm really looking forward to. But okay. Let's go into, you know, so what else do we got here? Any cards that anyone was super excited about other than Ugin? Like, there's a couple in black. Well, one in black that a couple people are playing. We can just jump into it. Sagir, the Golden Fang, I think just spiked on TCG player, like double
value.
Tessiger, yeah.
So we got a 5 mana, so 5 colorless and 1 black legendary creature that's a 4/5 with delve for two colorless and for two colorless, one green and blue hybrid, or two green and two blue hybrid. Put the top two cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a non-land card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand. As far as cube, I don't know if this card necessarily makes it, but I feel like this is really interesting, you know, design space. What do you guys think about this?
I'm always good to get something of value. I'm all about the value usually. So, sometimes on turn three, you're just casting this guy for like two mana. And if you ever get to untap with enough mana to activate him, I think he's probably going to be enough value to play him. But that being said, black's a pretty weak color in cube, in most cubes. I kind of want to give him a shot, but I don't know, just with the funky activation cost. At least I guess you can just run it in a blue-black deck, but I don't know. I kind of like to keep my eye out for, like, Tarmogoyf-esque cards, you know. Like, you can get a 4/5 for two. That's not bad.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, would you try it, I think, similar to what we were talking about, Grant, or Soulfire, or Grandmaster Flash, whatever the heck his name is. would you, if this card didn't have that ability, do you think this card is playable?
No, if you take the activated ability off of him, I don't believe he is playable, but, I could be wrong. I don't know.
I prefer Go ahead. I prefer Tombstalker even over Tassigar in cube.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it's much better for the mono black aggro deck, and that the effect is too cute in cube to be worth putting in my cube.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for sure. We also have Mardu Strike Leader, two colorless and a black for a 3/2. Whenever he attacks, put a 2/1 black warrior creature token on the battlefield, and it has the new mechanic Dash for three colorless and one black. Basically, you can cast this spell for its dash cost. If you do, it gains haste, and it's returned from the battlefield to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So, you know, this is interesting because, once again, I feel like this is also a tempo-y style card, and we've gotten a lot of those recently, and I'm not sure if this goes in. It seems very good, and in, once again, in black, which is the worst color, I think this card, if anything, may have a chance, but once again, I have not played with it, unfortunately, and I'm not sure if the value is that good. Have either of you guys played with this guy?
I haven't got to play with him yet, but I was watching one of the SCG videos where they were playing the Dash Dragon, and I really like the mechanic, especially if you know your opponent is like in a control deck that has board sweepers or just a lot of sorcery speed removal. Just being able to play it out, hit them, and then bring it back to your hand. And in this case, you leave behind a 2/1, so you know he's making things that they have to deal with, but he's doing it in a different way in which, like, they can't deal with him in a sorcery speed. So just having that option, black being a pretty weak color, and it does have these synergies with certain, like, human strategies, which I know some people are trying that in, like, their black-white decks. Like, they may run Champion of the Pair or something like that, or they're just their token strategies, you know, with a bunch of different anthems. I think this card's probably worth playing just to see how it is, because, like you said, it may be one of those cards you just have to play with to see.
Yeah. I like this card. This is a card that I'm debating testing, because I am a huge proponent of Mono Black Aggro and Cube, and this card makes it really above the rest, because Mono Black has a problem post-mid game, but if you're just pressuring the board even more and then leaving behind even more stuff, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a card that, this is one of the cards I like that I'll actually put in my cube and test.
Nice. We also got another Fleshbag Marauder, Merciless Executioner for two colorless and a black. Is anyone playing Fleshbag Marauder these days? I think card's still pretty good. I don't know if this necessarily warrants to have two, but notable include at uncommon.
Nope.
Yeah, I do like the sac effects, but I mean, if you had Fleshbag, I would probably just keep what you have. And if you didn't, I mean, I guess if you, for some reason, couldn't find a Fleshbag Marauder, these are going to be easier to find, but, I don't know. I think there's probably enough sac effects in black that you wouldn't necessarily have to play this guy, but I mean, 3 power, three mana. It's kind of an aggressive card, but I don't know. I don't think you need it.
Mm-hmm. So what about red? What do you guys see in red here? Anything too crazy? We do have the continuing the mythic cycle, the Shaman of the Great Hunt for three colorless and a red. A hasty 4/2, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, put a 1/1 counter on it, and with Ferocious, you can pay two colorless and two hybrid blue-green mana to draw a card for each creature you control with power 4 or greater.
I'm not sure what red 4-drop Zimmet runs, but I would like to hear what, if any, red 4-drop he would cut over this.
No, I run Blistering Firecat and Hellrider, and at least creature-wise, that I can think of off the top of my head. And this card is not better than either of them.
That's me. I was thinking, like, I wouldn't cut FTK for this. I wouldn't cut Hero of Oxid Ridge for this. And he's probably my last place 4-drop. I'd rather have Perforos than this guy. Hellrider, of course. So, I don't know. It just... Like it's kind of like the Tasker ability. Like, yeah, it's kind of almost too cute. And like, I don't, if I'm casting my 4-drop in a red deck, I'm not planning on untapping a whole lot. I'm hoping they scoop, especially if it's one with haste. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. I just don't like it a ton.
So I think, unfortunately, this is a smaller set, so we not too much going on. But in green, we got a great new 1-drop. I don't know if it's going to necessarily make everyone's list, but I'm definitely going to try him out. Warden of the First Tree. He is 1 green for a 1/1 with the ability. You can either pay 1 and an Orzhov. He becomes a 3/3. You can pay 2 and 2 white-black. He becomes a human spirit warrior with trample and lifelink, and 3 colorless and 3 black white and hybrid mana. If he has 5 plus or if he's a spirit, so if you have used the second ability, put 5 1/1 counters on him. That is a repeatable ability. Obviously, the direct comparison that most people are making is Figure of Destiny. I think they're different cards, but. Very similar, obviously. So, what do you? I really want to try this guy out. I'm kind of excited. I'm not sure if he's going to stay, but you know, once again, green aggro or just green value creatures that aren't elves, I feel like is something that a lot of cubes don't have.
We tested this card, and it is a pile. This is not a card that you want to play, at least in my cube. Keep in mind, my cube is 540 powered. This card's just too cute. With the red-white deck, you like it because you can soak all your mana into it, and that's what you want to be doing is being aggressive. This creature is not as good for the green deck, especially the ramp strategy. You'd rather be doing other things with your mana than trying to beat them and just having them doom-bladed or wrap the board. So this, we tried it last week, and it just underperformed, so we're cutting it.
I think one of the key places that this guy is a letdown is, compared to Figure, is when you activate Figure of Destiny the second time, he gets evasion and just, having been able to get 4 toughness a lot easier. I just, don't like this guy a ton. Like I said, just having, like when you sink all that mana into him and he's still just 3 toughness. And not to mention spirit attacks for 2 on turn 2 and then you can still play a 1-drop after that. So. I don't know, there's just so many ways this guy just doesn't do what I want him to do. There was a card in, if we can feel like a card in red I'd like to hear
about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's the Humble Defector. It's the 2/1 for 2 for 1 in the red that you tap to draw 2 cards and then target opponent gains control of him and you can only activate it during your turn. Mm-hmm. Are there any, are there any little cute combos you can do to untap him or to, just donate him away? Would you see any reason to play this card in any of your red decks at all?
I just still feel that it's too cute. I would rather have a slew of other cards to play. Like, the red, Red is one of the most powerful cube archetypes if you draft it correctly, and every card needs to have an immediate impact on the game. This, I feel, doesn't have a big enough impact for what it does.
Gotcha.
Sure.
And the other one was Alicia Who Smiles at Death, who is a 3-drop, so it's a little bit easier for me to think about playing it as opposed to a 4-drop. The 3/2 first strike for 3. And then she has like all these other legendary creatures has the off color double activation. I think it's one white black. And while you're attacking, you may activate it and return a creature with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped and attacking. You know, it's kind of quasi Revelark ability, except for they're tapped and attacking. So, I thought about trying to run this just trying to think of all the sweet 2-power cards I could play, like, I don't know, Mole Drifter, or, I don't know, even Goblin Rabble Master. If they deal with it, play this card, and then swing with it, and you get the Rabble Master. I don't think you get the trigger off Rabble Master the first time, but I don't know. Just because my one problem in red is running out of cards. So I could see where this might be just a form of card advantage. And, you know, a 3-power first strike is hard to deal with in combat, so they have to find an answer outside of combat usually.
Yeah, seems really interesting. The first card that comes to mind that I would want to get back is Geist. But at the same time, if you're attacking with Geist and don't make the angel, it's kind of counterproductive. Like to get him back tapped and attacking. But once again, I don't know. It's really interesting. Once again, like, yeah, Rabble Master, put Rabble Master into play, put Stoneforge back into play and get another trigger off of the ETB. Seems really interesting.
Yeah, I think you definitely would want to combo it with, like you said, the Enter the Battlefield stuff.
Solemn?
Solemn would just be straight value. But yeah, Mole Drifter would be kind of one of my favorite things to do, just to draw the more cards and then have a 2-power flyer to boot.
We tested this card in the Digga archetype, and we really did not like it. We preferred Gitu Slinger over this card for cube. The only cool thing that I saw done with it was returning Hornet Queen, which is pretty sick.
Yes, that is pretty sick.
Jeez.
But I think I'm going to cut it.
Okay. All right.
We also have Flame Wake Phoenix. I feel like we get a Phoenix every set. And this one's pretty good, but I don't know if... You know, of all of the Phoenixes, I can't think of all of them off the top of the head. Do you, is this one any good? So anyway, we have a 2 red and 1 colorless Flying Haste 2/2. He attacks each turn if able, and ferocious at the beginning of combat on your turn. If you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you may pay 1 red. If you do, return Flamewake Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield. Where does this stand in the long line of Phoenixes that are introduced in Standard every single set? And eventually fall off after a month or two.
I don't like it as much as Chandra's Phoenix. I like it more than most of the other ones because they're generally more expensive, harder to recur. I say harder to recur, more expensive to recur. I do like, you know, a hasty 2-power flyer for 3. That's pretty good stats. And then I think being able to return it even once is probably okay. It's just having to have the 4-power creature on the beginning of your combat. So, like, I guess you could, they killed it. You could untap, play something with 4-power, and if you have to, have the 1 mana left, but you can just get it right back. But, you know, I don't know. What do you think about it? Is it anything playable at all?
No, Chandra's Phoenix is way better than this card.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think it's a question.
Is it better than all the other unplayable Phoenixes?
No. The only Phoenix that should be in your cube is Chandra's Phoenix. Unless you're making a tribal cube.
Phoenix tribal.
That is a thing.
The one from Constark here would trigger it because it's 4-power.
Yeah.
Phoenix tribal. I have to think about that.
So we also got a bunch of... Oh, actually, there's one more green card I think is actually really good. Once again, I think of the six or seven, or no, five cards I'm trying out. One of them is Yasova Dragonclaw, bouncing back to green here. Two colorless and one green for a 4/2 with trample. At the beginning of combat on your turn, pay one colorless, one blue, red, one blue, red. If you do, gain control of target creature and opponent controls with power less than Yasova Dragonclaw's power. Until end of turn, untap that creature and it gains haste.
That's a lot of words for threat for a turn. But, I can only imagine. I talked to Chippy, Chippy 12, and he had opened one of these as pre-release. So they tested it in his cube right after. And, he got to slap Sword of Fire and Ice on this thing in his team or rug deck. So he said that made it really good. It's just like, this is a fun game. Magic's so easy. So. But I think if you have swords, this card could probably be good. I mean, a 4/2 trample for three. I mean, it's not the smallest beater in green. So I guess it depends on how crowded your three drop slot is in green and how aggressive you want to go.
This card seems cool, but I'd rather have Reclamation Sage or Courser of Kruphix in its slot. The red-green deck also, you can play Domri, which I feel does more than Yasova, if you're in that archetype.
Yeah, seems interesting.
True. Would you, do either of y'all play Boonsader? Which is only 4/2 for three I can think of, really, so. Because all the other three drops I play are so different, like Eternal Witness, Courser, Reclamation. I mean, there's really not. Or Yavimite Elder, you know, it does. They all do vastly different things. I do play Boonsader right now. I might cut it just to try this card out. I did open up a Sweet Full, so I am a sucker for playing the fulls I open.
Nice. Yeah, I know White Wolf 123 on MTG Salvation was really championing this card. So yeah, I'm going to give it a try. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's going to stick around too long, but pretty excited to try out some new spicy stuff. As opposed to going over every single dragon, are there any specific ones anyone wants to talk about? We got five.
They're all bad.
Yeah, I think the only one that's like close to playable in the deck that would want to play it would be the blue-black one, Selimgar, but it's... What isn't it like six mana or something like that? Like
six so mana.
There's so many six mana blue or black finishers that I'd much rather have this card. I just can't even.
I don't like the picture, dude. He looks weird.
Yeah. he's got hexproof, which prevents good camera shots from being taken. So. Now that is one thing. Being hexproof, he's only three power, so he like dodges randomly, like the Elspeth. Ability, seven toughness is like, there's no way you're just doing wide damage to this thing to wipe it. But it's just like I said, there's just so many good six drops in blue or black for a control deck. So I don't know why you'd want this guy unless you just really love your dragons in cube. So, and that, I mean, that's, I think by far the best one, for cube anyway, but it's still not good enough. Now the one, the girl one has really sweet art. It's got antlers coming out of its antlers. A Tarka world render. Now that would, I'm sure there's some combo wombo stuff you could do with it, but, yeah, no, none of the dragons I believe are going to get there.
Yeah. I agree. So, you know, of all the cards, in Fate Reforged, what do you guys say is your, number one and two? Apart from Ugin, you know, Ugin I think is for most people going to be the most exciting card they play with. But of anything you add, or if you don't add anything, I know Zemmant maybe may only be adding a couple cards. You know, what do you think is the most exciting? Pardon me, addition from this?
It's still Ugin. There is not that much to this set. Khans did a lot, but that's about it. Hey, this set, from a financial perspective, from a standard perspective, which most people don't care about that format, the set hasn't really done much. You know, it's got these cool little dragons, but all I really care about is Ugin. And I think that's what most cubers want as well. is just a nice splashy mythic.
Mine would have to be Ugin, Mardu, Woe Reaper, and I want to really try out the green one drop, the first tree. I am really excited for the one mana 2/1, just because I really like drafting that deck, and I think it's, once again, just a sweeter card. I tried Herald of Anafenza for the longest time, and it just didn't get there.
It's funny, after Milo pooped on it the other day, and I hadn't played it yet, I actually played it, and I'm like, he was right, this card. Which I kind of knew, but you know, it's like you kind of want to untap with something to really get a feel for it. But yeah, it's so a question: if you're gonna have Mardu Woe Reaper, are you just adding, or are you gonna pull another one drop or pull something else?
I'm cutting the Herald, but that was I had one slot left. I had Isamaru, Mother of Runes, Soldier of the Pantheon, Savannah Lions, and Student of Warfare. I think
Student of Warfare, yeah.
And then sometimes I have Weathered Wayfarer. I don't know. It's not necessarily a bad card at all, but I took it out of my cube recently for some reason. But I think these, you know, for the most part, are probably going to tie up the one slot for a decent amount of time. And Mardu Woe Reaper was literally the exact card I wanted. So really happy about that.
Yeah, I think for me, besides Ugin, it's the Mardu Strike Leader I want to try out, because like Zimit said, I want black aggro, or just a black to be a better color in my cube. And I think it's strong enough to see some play. It's actually interesting. You know, I told last time that we were going to try and draft my cube at my, LGS, because most everybody was tired of drafting cons is before Fate Reforged came out. So we drafted it, and the guy that first pick Phyrexian Obliterator, who I've been considering just yanking from the cube, but I haven't found anything to replace it with. So he first picks that, and I see him. He says, well, that kind of tells me what colors I'm in, or color I'm in. And I'm like, there's no way he took Obliterator. And then he like flashed it, and I'm like, okay, sure. And he's like just 2-0'd 5 straight opponents.
Wow.
Just crushed. Of course, he got past the sickest deck. He had like Sinkhole. He went Thoughtseize into Sinkhole into either Liliana or Lifebane Zombie into Phyrexian Obliterator. Like, he had that curve like an obscene amount of times. But yeah, so the mono black deck actually won my LGS cube event. So
nice. Do you run Mind Twist in your cube?
I do. He did not get it.
Okay. Because I really love drafting that archetype, and if you get Hymn to Torak and Mind Twist and Skull Clamp with like the Gravecrawlers and the Blood Gas, that deck is quite good.
Oh man.
At least in my cube. That's how we play it.
I actually got destroyed in that event. I first picked Agent of Bolas because it's my favorite card, like, ever. Oh. When I started, that was like the set that was out, and I was like, it just won Worlds, and I was like, okay, I want to play this card. But so I was trying to build the blue-black artifact deck, and I got there almost. Like, I got Academy, I got Sphinx of the Steel Wind, I got Inkwell Leviathan, I got just a bunch of like 2 or 3 mana rocks. But the guy across from me, one of my friends, he opened up Tinker and got past Mana Drain. So and then he got, I think, Sundering Titan. So it was,
that's rough.
Yeah, it was just, and I actually saw 0 counter spells the entire draft, because I had 2 blue drafters on each, like, 2 seats down from me, and I didn't open. So like I had actual no ways to counter anything. However, he did, when I played my friend that had the mana drain and everything, he mana drained my turn 2 play after I went, he mana drained my turn 2 or 3 play untapped, and tinkered a Blightsteel into play, and I didn't lose the next turn. I actually got to had to pay 11 life and Toxic Deluge into play.
Nice.
And I didn't die for another 10 turns when he took my he cast Bribery and got my Sphinx of the Steel Wind, and that was pretty much it.
Oh man.
But we had a really good time.
So good.
I'm just curious to ask from a cube management standpoint, and I know a lot of people are often, you know, try to be aware of this. Were there any archetypes that were drafted, or any cards that were drafted that you were surprised about? Like, that, I know you said Obliterator was on the fence, but were any of the other drafters kind of like, you know, maybe thought of something that you don't normally think about, or?
No, I was trying to think of the decks that I saw. Of course, the guy with the least experience, he'd never drafted Cube. He had to read like half the cards during the draft, like twice, because he'd never seen them. He drafted Mono Red and had the sickest Mono Red deck. He actually, he was going to not play Sulfuric Vortex, and I was like, no, because I saw him deck building beside him. I was like, no, this is like the second best card in your deck right now. So he had every good red card you could think of. He went, he went Goblin Guide into Shrine, into Vortex. One of the games, so that I definitely lost that one. But so they, you know, there's a mono red deck, there was the mono black deck, there were two different kind of artifact cheat into play type decks. There's two kind of quote unquote fair green white decks, although one of them did play Mirage Wake and Eldrazi, so you know he wasn't being really fair. But other than that, there was a blue-red tempo deck. Just your stuff you'd kind of expect. Nobody picked White Weenie just because it kind of got spread out too much.
Mm. Interesting. Well, sweet. It's really cool once again. You said that your local LGS like let you run it as the FNM, right?
Yeah, they had a cons draft off for the people that didn't want to play. Like they had 10 for their cons draft, and we had 9 for the cube, which gave people a buy every round, which was like the worst thing. But, like it was like only $5 and they were doing pack support for, like they put in like a pack per player. So, a couple of people won some packs and everybody had a good time.
Nice. That's awesome. So, Zemet, would you like to share with us some of the stuff about, obviously, your cube? You said it's 540 powered. You know, what archetypes do you support? I know you're a big proponent of black aggro. You know, do you run any, we often like to ask, do you run any fringe strategies? Like I try to kind of push an artifact archetype with like Mishra's Workshop or something like that. What are your things? If your cube, is it any different? Is it going to be more straight down general of what you expect from a power cube? Share with us.
So I like big flashy plays in my cube. Ever since I went back to college this semester from St. Louis, at St. Louis we had FNMs anywhere between 50 and 120 people, so it was no problem getting people to cube, especially with my St. Louis friends. Where I am now at Mizzou, a lot of people are scared of cube because they don't think they know how to draft it. So I want people like watching me and the people that I'm playing and being like, holy, I don't know if I can say that on the podcast, but... You know, holy, what the heck did he just do? So, we actually had to remove the power for the last two drafts because I cast Ancestral Recall 4 times targeting myself in a Storm deck. Time Spiral and Snap, and all that fun stuff.
Oh my gosh.
So we removed that. We removed Time Bolt because someone just went Mishra's Workshop, Time Bolt will take a key. So we have two different ways to draft my cube. We have both the powered and unpowered way. There is a ton of really cool interactions in my cube. I'm a huge proponent of drafting Zoas Conscripts because it does so much in my cube. You can take stuff. The coolest deck that I saw, somebody drafted Omnath Storm, which is really cool. Storm is extremely well supported in my cube. And what they did was they played their mono green deck with like Raphelos and Omnath and all that. But then they also played Yawgmoth's Bargain and Yawgmoth's Will. And they actually were able to just win by making a ton of mana on the end step and then going off and paying green to channel an Emrakul as well. So it was just like a 2 or 3 color deck that just did everything. But artifacts are actually such a huge part of my cube that we have Nolrod in the cube just for the other decks to deal with it.
Nice.
Yeah. The mono green, almost every green card has a way to destroy artifacts. Because artifacts is such a problem. I've got both Tezzerets in the cube. I've got Tinker. I've got all that fun stuff. The mono green deck is obviously supported. There's a cool black white deck that you can draft with Gerard's Verdict and all that fun stuff. The swords are obviously supported. Kikijiki's fun. I did lock somebody out with the Strip Mine Crucible Worlds on turn 3. I don't know. It's just a lot of fun. It's a very powerful cube and people seem to enjoy to play with it.
Awesome. And I know, personally, I've talked to you several times, that you are big into the pimping stuff, the altars, the foils. You've sent me some pictures of some, you know, beautiful altars. Go in on that. How did you kind of get the bug for alters or foils, or, what did you want?
So I had an old cube that was, this was a couple years ago. It was the most pimp cube that I could possibly do. It had Guru Lands as basics, and everything was foil, and then it got stolen from me. Luckily, it was insured. So I was able to use the insurance money to rebuy the old cube, which cost me about $6,000 to make this cube, I would guess, without the power, and then obviously a lot more with the power in it.
So you're running real power in your cube.
Yes. And no, you shouldn't be running whiteboarded power in your cube either. But so we decided that we would start getting some alters, and I had talked with Klug. I had worked with Klug in the past, and a lot of my EDH decks were altered, so I'm like, well, let's just alter this cube. So the cube went from about $6,000 to complete to about, I would guess, around $50,000 to alter the entire cube, because it's about between $50 and $100 per card in a 540 cube.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of them, getting a set of power altered is probably going to be about $5,000 from Klug that we were talking about on what I want to do. But on average, I would say between $50 and $100 per alter. Mm-hmm. Is the average cost of each extension or whatever. But it's about 20% altered at the moment. I get a couple of cards back every week from the cube, but it does take a very long time for the 10 alterists I have to do 540 cards.
Yeah, I'm actually getting a piece done, getting a Hymn to Torok altered by Eric Klug. Just sent it out last week. It's going to be a Starry Night, which is going to be pretty cool. So get it in there. Really happy, altering is, that's one of the things I like to see when I draft a new cube. Obviously, when you build a cube and you're doing cube management, it's kind of almost like a light inside you. Like, I like to kind of show, as weird as that may sound, I don't know, I like to show off my collection as my cube, and that's some of the reasons why I've kind of got out of a lot of competitive stuff. Like, I don't play Modern anymore. I sold off or traded off a bunch of my cards into random cube foils. And there's just something about opening up a cube pack and seeing, a piece of power, a full art Mutavault, a beautiful altar. It's just so awesome. And I really, really appreciate those kind of, those alters done and see the beautiful work that everybody puts out on Reddit and Facebook. And it's just really cool.
Yeah, Reddit is a very big proponent of alters. I posted my thought season. It was like top of like the month or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen it. For the listeners that are listening, it's on my Facebook page and my Twitter account. But alt extensions are something that most people like to see in cube. There's different types of extensions in my cube, but like the actual character alters, a lot of people don't seem to like. So I try to stick to basic extensions.
Interesting.
Yeah, I remember your Sensei's Divining Top was definitely one of the best ones I've seen.
The Guru Top? Yeah, people love that.
Now, here's a question for you. Since you are anti-whiteboarded power, to quote-unquote get rid of whiteboarded power, should you use that to get altered and just extend it and just get rid of the where you can't see it? Does that kind of help that?
A lot of people are iffy about getting actual powered altered. I've seen a lot of collector's edition pieces be altered. In fact, mm-hmm. Klug has done a lot of collector's edition alters instead of normal alters. I think 5 of the Lotuses he did were collector's edition. But, it's up to you. It's up to each individual person. Just make sure when you get it altered that you know who you're dealing with and that they actually know what they're doing. Because mm-hmm. the last thing you want is like a squiggly face drawn on your mocks.
So. Yeah, that would be all kinds of bad. Man, so interesting. I kind of want to do a quick review. Now, looking back, we were obviously in January of 2015. And as a year in review, I think we had so many good sets. We had a bunch of sweet cards that came out. The cards that I think that were the most impactful were definitely the Draft Matters cards. See Wizards kind of go into the design space where we got cards like Cogwork Librarian, Lore Seeker, Agent of Acquisitions, any of those kind of cards. I think those really not only improved the cube experience for a lot of people, but were just really interesting. And it kind of, it makes me kind of question, you know, like, what's next? Obviously, they're going to, you know, revisit this in some time. You know, what can we expect? And, you know, of all the cards that came out, what do you guys think were the most, you know, the top three of the year that you included in cube? And it's kind of hard. It's a pretty big question, but, you know, of anything, you know, what do you think?
I've actually got my two right off the top of my head because I like the artifact deck so much. Dak Faden, I think, is a really, really sweet card for cube. Actually seeing him get put on a Magic card was pretty sweet with Conspiracy. Now the fact that the foils are outrageous, not really cool with that because I didn't pick one up yet. but that, and like you're talking about the Draft Matters cards, I like the ones like Librarian, but probably the one I think that affects gameplay the most is Aether Searcher, which I haven't actually added yet, but the more, I mean, I just ordered a foil the other day, but it's where you, it's, how was it, stats? It's like a 6/5 for 6 or something like that. But like when you draft it, the next card you draft, you make note. And whenever you play Aether Searcher, you get to play that card for free. You just search it up out of your library or your hand and just play it for free. So I mean, there's so many, I don't know, sweet cards you could play for that. So, that's one I really like, Aether Searcher and probably Ugin. That'd be my number three. Just that they printed it. I can't really think of another one that would be better than that. Mm-hmm. So,
I think mine are, once again, I think Dak Faden was excellent. I think Council's Judgment, was an sweet card. Clever Impersonator. Yeah, there's so many. Like, I really like Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, but at the same time, I don't know if they're the best. And then on the low end, we had like Blood Soak Champion and Gnarled Scarhide for the smaller cards that are still, you know, very impactful. But, I think the top three I have to probably agree with you were, for me at least, the Draft Contracts, Dak Faden, and then I would say probably like Council's Judgment or something.
Yeah, I like Judgment too. Go ahead.
I would agree. I think Dak Faden is probably one of the best cube cards that came out this year, especially with the artifact decks, that you can play a control deck and still beat a Tinkered Blightsteel in a blue-red deck. Like, mm-hmm. it's such a cool card.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so on the podcast, we've had some good guests so far, but what I thought we might try and do is, when we do have a good cube guest on, like yourself, we're going to ask them what their three favorite build around the cube cards. Like if you're going pack one, pick one, what do you want to open up that you can just brew with, that you can just draft a whole sweet deck around?
So for me, I would have to say Mind Twist, pack one, pick one. I love forcing mono black and Mind Twist is extremely powerful. Everybody likes seeing Tinker in their opening pack, I'm sure, because you can just go right into it. And then the last card that I like to see the most is either Time Spiral or Channel. I really love doing broken things in cube.
Very cool.
Cannot argue with any of those. Those are all just, like you said, it's so much fun to see the Tinker, because you do have to build around it, or like the Mind Twist, like getting the fast mana. It just makes that card so unfair. Well, that's some pretty sweet cards to build around. I think we're probably about done. I really want to thank Lengthy Zimmet for coming on here and talking to us. We've talked to him a lot back and forth on like Facebook and Twitter about cube. So it's really nice to be able to get him on here. And so, like you said earlier, they can find you just Twitter, Facebook, these places. Anything else?
Yeah, just look on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube at Lengthy Zimmet. If you're ever at a GP, you can probably find me. I'll be wearing a Brainstorm Brewery sweatshirt or other Magic stuff, and I'll be sitting by the dealer tables with a binder, or we'll be Cuban. So just keep a lookout if you're at a GP and shoot me a tweet.
Sweet. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to our Fate Reforged review and year in review episode, and we'll see you next time.